Today on Movie World, let's review Nymphomaniac and Enemy. Time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you.
What if you like them a lot?
Then this show especially is for you.
Also for you.
Just checking.
And if you don't like them, then why are you listening? Like, go away. Go do something else with your life.
Yeah, there's other stuff on the internet.
Nymphomaniac, that's a great segue
to
Nymphomaniac.
There is a podcast for everything.
Yes.
There is. I mean, that's the thing about podcasting. It's that whole idea of the long tail.
Yes.
When, like, you can make a podcast that only two people listen to and it can be their favorite podcast in the world.
Yes.
It's like a one-way conversation.
It is, actually, yeah. There's a lot of podcasts that it's just one person. I couldn't do that.
I think you could. Sometimes.
I think you would have to.
There are times I do ramble.
I bet there are some good people though. You know,
yes.
Who could really hold.
I used to listen to some of them. Back in the day before Mac was really popular, there was a guy. He's actually a local San Diegan guy. He did a podcast called The Mac Cast. And he's this really like nerdy. Hi, my name's Adam, and I do podcast. But you know what? It was a really good podcast. He scoured the internet for like little tidbits of Mac news, and he had tips and tech tips. And he would talk for about 45 minutes.
Oh God!
I know it sounds horrendous.
It sounds like torture.
There were two podcasts that I listened to back in the day when podcasts just got started, and that was one of them. Anyway,
okay.
Let's move on swiftly.
And that's the reason that we've got Movie Wallers, okay? You look at me like I'm like some nerd from outer space. Come on, guys.
Okay. From nerds to nymphomaniacs.
There you go.
And I think I'm interviewing that one.
You are.
Introing, not interviewing.
Oh, I would love to interview some nymphomaniacs. I haven't seen the movie. I really want to see it, but...
I'm surprised you haven't seen it yet.
Time management.
It's been crazy, I know.
Yeah. So, Lars von Trier, the l'enfant terrible, is that how you say it?
L'enfant terrible.
L'enfant terrible of European cinema, the provocateur, is here with his newest movie, Nymphomaniac, which is being released, interestingly, as part one and part two. This is the first part. He actually filmed 5 hours of the movie and split it up into two after, you know, editing already about an hour's worth of content. And following Melancholia from last year, this is his latest movie. It stars his third consecutive collaboration with Charlotte Gainsbourg after Antichrist and Melancholia. This is the third movie. Nymphomaniac is essentially about a woman who is found beaten up in an alleyway by a man. The man gives her shelter. And while she's being nursed back to her health, she starts telling him her story. And the movie kind of starts from the time when she was a young one, and presumably goes through the rest of her life. The man is played by Stellan Skarsgård, and the movie essentially is a chronicle of her life as an nymphomaniac. The movie has some very interesting supporting cast. It has Uma Thurman, it has Stacey Martin, it has
Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf, of all people, in it as well. And I really wanted to see it. I haven't had a chance to see it. There are a few people who are like Lars von Trier. He really, really messes with you. And he enjoys it while he's messing with you. But there's no avoiding his brilliance. So with that, really eager to hear what the two of you thought about it.
And just a point, it was actually released as a single movie in Europe.
Oh.
So it was like
four or five hour
long thing.
Really?
They split it up for certain markets, the US included, simply because most people couldn't tolerate sitting there for 5 hours. But at least one of the reviews I read.
Hmm. And what's interesting is they're not, usually when they break it up, like when they did Kill Bill Volumes 1, 2, and 3, you know, they were released every consecutive year.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this Volume 1 and Volume 2 are being released within about a couple of months of each other.
Because it was effectively one movie. I don't think he ever wanted to split it other than the market wouldn't support a five-hour investment of time. And this movie was already going to be hard to market. So cutting down the people who've got, you know, 5 hours to sit in a movie theatre and theatres that could do that for one ticket price.
Yeah, that's true.
So.
Okay, so Lars von Trier's Melancholia was a film I really enjoyed, and I love the film Shame with Michael Fassbender, for which I think he was robbed of an Oscar. So I was excited to see this movie.
Yes, go on.
But I'm so disappointed by this dull, strange, and even boring offering. It relies on its shock value and the pushing of sexual boundaries on a mainstream movie to entertain us versus coming up with a story that ultimately kept my interest or even intrigued me. I was so disappointed by this.
What's the matter with you? I must admit. So before I yell at Rashmi for being wrong totally about this movie, I wished you had seen this yesterday because I think it's this would have been a good three-way discussion. I couldn't.
Oh,
wow, Rashmi. The insinuation she couldn't do with one with one ooh. So I couldn't sit through Antichrist. That was Lars von Trier's, I think, first movie that I was familiar with. It was on Netflix. I started watching it like one night, and
it's a hard movie to watch.
I remember you telling us about it. I think you watched it on Yazdi's recommendation because we had talked about it.
Well, not necessarily his recommendation, but I think the idea of it intrigued me. I got through about 20 minutes of it before I was just like, I can't deal with this. This is too much.
It's too disturbing, right?
On the other hand, I loved Melancholia. I think Melancholia was brilliantly done. I think about it all the time. It's one of my favorite Kirsten Dunst performances. And so clearly I was watching, I came into Nymphomaniac with some degree of anticipation. And to Rashmi's point, it is long, and it is definitely a button pusher. There are things that happen in this movie that are there to do nothing but
to shock you.
Yeah.
Or more than shock you.
To just see how far you can sit there and take it, because it's punishing to watch at times, I think. But on the other hand, it's got some moments of sheer genius in it. The Uma Thurman moments in this movie are it's spectacularly written and directed.
It's the best. I was going to say the only redeeming factor of this movie is that Uma Thurman scene.
And the darkly cynical humor. I mean, there's a whole section in this movie which is around fly fishing, and it somehow they relate the nymphomaniac behavior to a certain type of sports fishing in this movie. And I found myself just chuckling all the way through it, because I'm like, it was done in a way that was justifiable. It wasn't some bizarre abstract pairing of things just to try and make you scratch your head or bewilder you in some way. It was a really clever set of parallels between these two activities and otherwise related as metaphors, and I think it worked really well. I think the only thing that I'm struggling with as I kind of walked out of part one was, do I want to sit through another 2.5 hours of this for Nymphomaniac Volume 2?
Right, because did you even care for the character?
Because I was intrigued by the character, but I think the movie was unnecessarily long. I think there were a lot of sequences that were there that were, well, much longer than they needed to be. You could have made this a very punchy little movie by getting in and out of these moments quickly. Instead,
using puns on purpose?
Punchy little.
We labor over these scenes for 15, 20, 25 minutes at times, and I'm just waiting for the next chapter in the story to kind of occur. So that's my only real criticism of it. But in terms of a movie that's darkly, darkly comical and tickles my funny bone in a way that very few movies do, I again, not another pun. this movie worked for me.
I mean, there are a lot of people who I respect as reviewers, and the ones who have really liked this have almost always mentioned in their reviews that the best way to appreciate this movie is to see it as a comedy. Even though it may not seem like that.
No, I agree with you. I think it's comical, and I think that whole sequence using fly fishing and this rather, old gentleman type character to have that conversation with someone who's clearly messed up and screwed up in their head, talking about their, perverse actions that get them off. is highly comical. It's ironic, you know, the way that he's paired that. And I think it's smart for that. But it falls down because literally it's too unbelievable. From the fact that this injured woman is telling her life story to some stranger, right through to like Shia LaBeouf's terrible acting and even worse accent. I mean, it's just the plot is just so unbelievable. And I think for a movie that's called Nymphomaniac, I want to understand why she's a nymphomaniac and why she feels she needs to do these things to have value in herself or not have value in herself.
So
all this is for me is a series of sexual encounters punctuated with a little bit of narration and story with a few stories about fly fishing thrown in.
No, there's an...
But with one spectacular scene of Uma Thurman.
There is an underlying pathology to this character that is there, and that's what he's playing with here, because you don't need to necessarily understand where it comes from. It's like, why is somebody schizophrenic? You know, they're just born that way. And I think that's what he's portraying here in so many ways. And it's done with the kind of the comedy comes from kind of a strange place of irony, right? It's the things that this character does in her world that seem so ordinary to her and yet are so extraordinary to the people whose lives she come into contact with. They're either extraordinarily good or they're extraordinarily bad, but in some way, shape or form, she's just like this force of nature around which chaos ensues.
I didn't even give her that much respect that she causes chaos. She just is this...
But it,
going out and getting kicks.
But it's pathological. She's not a thrill seeker. She's broken.
I agree. And
but broken in the most fundamental way.
I agree. But I didn't get anything from seeing her go through encounters of sleeping with 20 men on a train. I'm exaggerating. Right. But what I'm saying is I get nothing as a moviegoer from watching a character do that if it doesn't move the story forward. And so maybe had it been a full-length movie, we may get more from it.
But the fact that we're stopped halfway is very difficult. It could have been done with less because we don't need to see a lot of these encounters drawn out in the way that they are. The plot could have been told. And it's kind of like Blue is the Warmest Color, where we had nine-minute-long sex scene, right? You didn't need all 9 minutes of that to convey.
No, I'm just kidding. Go on.
but this is the thing. You didn't need all 10 minutes of that sex scene to convey the way that these characters felt about each other. And that's what, you know, I think this movie also suffers from. And just while we're on that topic, I mean, it's very, very sexually explicit. He did the same thing that I think he did in Antichrist, which is he got porn actors to shoot. So what we're seeing there is real, but their body doubles for the famous people.
And they're digitally
and
superimposed.
Then digitally composed to make it look like it's Shia LaBeouf's junk that we're seeing on screen and so on and so forth. But
maybe
why? I mean, if you're going to do that, just hire some porn actors. You know, I'm sure there are good ones out there. And shoot, you know, otherwise it's not necessary. And I hate to be such a kind of prude humbug, but the sexually explicit nature of this movie that's depicted on screen visually is a button pushing exercise. It's trying to shock the moviegoer for an art house type film. I think he wants people to walk out.
But it's not even shocking.
No, it's
some of it's not shocking. I mean,
it's more than you would see in most films in a movie theater, unless it's an adult movie theater.
So right? there's a French director, Catherine Brilla, and she makes a lot of movies which are sexually explicit, and you know she's very well regarded. But she does the same thing. She just hires professional, you know, porn actors for the roles which require that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think he's just. He's too mischievous. I mean, mischievous is too easy a word. It gets him off easy. I think he's too much of a troublemaker. He wants to kind of be stupid and silly and annoying and push the envelope. At this point, doing sexually explicit scenes in a Lars von Trier's movie is not a novelty anymore. He's been doing it for 3-4 years in a row in movies. So I think It's just part of his whole construct, I think.
The sex in there is the same way that Quentin Tarantino can use violence, right? It's like it's cranked up too far just for the shock factor. And
but my problem, Joe, is that it's not even shocking sex. It's not like he's getting five dogs in a room and having three naked women and saying, let's have some bestiality. Okay, that would be pushing the envelope.
Silly.
That would be doing something different.
But that's
if
silly.
You've just got two people doing it in a haystack or doing it in an office or, you know, doing it on a motorbike, I'm sorry, that's not pushing buttons. It's just, it's a waste of time. And it's not moving the story forward. That's how it came across to me. If you're going to try and be mischievous, Yazdi, then you should do something mischievous with it. All we've got is this young, reckless woman having these sexual encounters again and again. There's nothing dangerous about it,
I need to see it.
Yazdi, go see it. And then part two, I think, opens in a couple of
weeks. Oh, I thought we were going to do a part two podcast.
And then we're going to do a part two podcast and revisit this movie. Because I think Rashmi and I are too far apart for anyone to kind of know whether or not to go see this movie. So we need a third vote in this case.
Yeah.
I think this is a great example of why Movie Wallace always tries to do three reviewers.
Yeah.
By the way, based on your suggestion, not that it matters, but I did go and see Lunchbox and I think it's one of the best movies of the year.
Oh,
yay! It's just brilliant. People should go out and watch it. And also, while we're on the topic, since you mentioned it, Blue is the Warmest Color is streaming live on Netflix. If anybody has a Netflix account, please see it.
Not and 9 minutes to spare.
No, not for the 9 minute sex scene, but because it's a truly wondrous
movie.
Film. Yeah, so do check it out.
Okay, so let's summarize this one because we're not going to agree. So, Joe, you go first.
So, you know, he's a fearless movie maker, but, you know, I mean, in some ways, making pornography is not necessarily fearless. He's just pushing buttons out here, and I think that's my only real criticism of that plus the fact that this movie seems to be too long are my only real criticisms. Other than that, I think it's a very clever film about a kind of character that we don't often see on screen, and she's not likable, and she's pathological, and she damages lives in so many different ways. And I think he's exploring the comical side of somebody who is so different to the world around them, that's so almost immune to the way that other people react to her and her condition, even though by its very nature, you have to interact with her in order to, you know, she's like the serial killer, but she's a serial sexual encounterer. And it's got some really funny moments. I enjoyed this movie a lot. I do want to see part two, but I'm hoping for a director's cut, which will cut out all the cruft, make this a really excellent two-hour movie, because I think it has the potential to be that it's just not quite there. So I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10, and I'm looking forward to part two.
So Joe must have watched a completely different movie to me, because I didn't see that complex character. I didn't see her damage anyone else's life except her own. And frankly, I couldn't even be bothered to see what happens in the end. Overall, Nymphomaniac is not worth your time or money. Watch porn instead. At least you know what you're getting. I'm going to give this one a 4 out of 10. I have no desire to go and watch part two.
You actually took me to see this one.
I know.
Because it was Friday night.
I know.
And it was getting late and you were like, let's go see a movie. So we did. We went and saw this at 9 o'clock.
Right. And the reasons why were because I loved Melancholia and I loved Shame. Now, if you look at a movie like Shame with Michael Fassbender, now here's a movie where I can see he's a nymphomaniac. He's damaged. And we see the pain and the journey that man takes and how difficult it is for him to get away from his behavior. That's a good film. Watch Shame instead.
Yeah, he's just a sap. He's like, he needs to get over himself. He's the alcohol, you know. This character here, she's the fun drunk. She's the one who doesn't give a hoot. So let's move on to our second movie of the week, which is Enemy. Unfortunately, I haven't prepared an introduction for this, so I'm just going to read it straight from the tagline on Rotten Tomatoes. It's a movie starring Jake Gyllenhaal, who reteams with his Prisoners director, Academy Award nominee Denis Villeneuve. It's described as a sexy and hypnotically surreal psychological thriller that breathes new life into the doppelganger tradition. Just by that very description, I'm intrigued. I did enjoy Prisoners a lot, as did Rashmi.
Yeah, and I'm dying to see this one. It's just opening and I can't find it open yet. So I'm dying to hear what you think, Yazdi.
Adding to the particular anticipation about this movie is the fact that it's got not only Jake Gyllenhaal, but Melanie Laurent, who I like very much, Isabella Rossellini, Sarah Gadon. So terrific cast. And Yazdi, just let's tell me, is this one I need to run out and see? Because I thought Prisoners was terrific.
So it's an epic mindfuck, the movie is. It is. It's, you know, by virtue of that, it's not for everyone. And I think this is the kind of movie which will really polarize audiences because...
Oh. More so than the last movie that we reviewed?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so. I believe so. I personally could not have had a better movie-going experience.
I mean,
I just lapped it up. I mean, utterly transfixed, fully bewildered, minute by minute. And I think with Incendies, which was the first movie that Denis Villeneuve made, he's a French-Canadian director, and then Prisoners. And now with this, his most personal movie, Enemy, I think this director has become a force to contend with. I mean, more than anything else, and all three of his movies have this, is he has a gift for conveying a sense of queasiness, a heightened anxiety. You know, you feel kind of an unrest while you're watching the movie. Prisoners had this feeling too, where you knew there's this foreboding feeling of something bad has happened. There's some evil lurking around. And this movie literally takes the very literal aspects, say, of Prisoners and completely makes it cerebral. I mean, I've watched this movie. I have 100 questions about it. I cannot stop thinking about it.
Really?
I literally cannot stop. Because the movie is not difficult to decipher in a, you know, unlike, say, something like Holy Motors or The Tree of Life. You know, those kinds of movies take some, you know, what does the scene mean? Okay, there is a leprechaun walking around, say, in Holy Motors.
Right.
What does it mean? This movie, literally, scene by scene, every scene makes perfect sense. But how does it all tie together? And what does it all mean? I don't have a clue. And I am just obsessed with this movie because I'm trying to decipher it. And just to give you an idea, the movie starts with a quote, which is that chaos is order yet to be undeciphered.
Oh, I like that.
You know, and that's what the whole movie is. And I think the director says, you know, fuck movies which give you all the answers. I'm not going to give you the answer. You make what you will out of this. And I like that there is a movie like that which doesn't give it to you on a platter.
Ooh.
And it's, you know, so the story is about there's the schlubby professor in Toronto. And, you know, he kind of has this pseudo kind of sometimes yes, sometimes no relationship with his neighbor who's played by Melanie Laurent. And one day he's watching a movie and, you know, he's really bored at home. Actually, a colleague at work recommends he should watch a movie. He's watching the movie at home on the DVD and he sees a bellboy, a character in the movie. And it's just for a second, but that person looks exactly like him, the bellboy in the movie. And so he gets obsessed about this and he starts searching and looking and he finds out that there is somebody else who looks exactly like him and talks exactly like him. So this is a true doppelganger movie. He finds out there's, and he meets this person. And that person has his own life. He has his own life. And the movie plays out a particular way. And I don't even know right now. And this is one of the best things about the movie where it's kind of like the Fight Club. Is that some part of his head? Does this other person not exist? And has he imagined this other person? Because this other person wears leather jackets. He has his life in control. He's really like, you know, this cool guy. He has a wife who is pregnant. Is this a figment of his imagination? Or is this really another person? And the movie completely plays with this and never gives you any answers.
Okay. Oh.
Let's just stop the podcast right now because I want to find a theater that's showing this movie and go see it.
That really sounds
amazing.
And Jake Gyllenhaal, I think, is a phenomenal actor. So how does he do? Because he's so basically both characters.
He plays both the characters. Isabella Rossellini has one scene where he plays the mother and she's brilliant. Interestingly, and I will get to Jake Gyllenhaal. Interestingly, this movie was shot before Prisoners.
Oh.
So he made this movie with Jake Gyllenhaal and he obviously had such a great experience with him that he asked him to play the character in
Prisoners.
Prisoners.
Yeah.
So has this been on the film festival circuit, or has it been in a closet waiting for the director to achieve some... I mean, what have they been doing with it if they shot it?
So I think this movie will really... There'll be people who'll be throwing things at the screen because they'll get so frustrated by how surreal it is. But the movie is also very meditative.
Is it inaccessible then?
I think it's very inaccessible. I think it's very accessible in a minute by minute. And, you know, this movie builds a real feverish pitch, at least to me. I almost felt feverish to the whole movie, like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? And, you know, it does have that feeling of unpredictableness about it. But for some, it might get very frustrating for some viewers, especially because, like I said, it's no secret, this movie does not give you all the obvious answers. But it's precisely because of that I right now have about 10 theories in my head about, you know, what could it possibly be. There's one other piece of the movie which is a complete spoiler, and I don't want to say it until you guys have said it. But that's the other thing which really surprises me. That really makes this movie very, very unique, I think.
So some of the criticisms I'm reading of this in the Rotten Tomatoes website are that it's too pretentious and thinks it's a lot smarter than it is. Is that true? Can you see where that's coming from?
I can totally see where that's coming from, because it almost creates... It creates the stage where these two characters who look like each other interact with each other. And then you can almost say that it doesn't know what to do with it at that point. I think it knows what to do with it. And I think it plays with those characters very well. Mm-hmm. But I honestly, I've read a lot of interviews. I don't think Jake Gyllenhaal knows the answer to the movie. I don't think the director knows the answer to the movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's
based
on a novel, which is very well regarded. Mm-hmm. I think the movie is just meant to be this kind of a journey of, you know, of identity and who are you and are we all two things at once all the time?
Right.
You know, do we all always imagine that if I had my way, I would have lived this other life? And what if that other life takes over?
Oh, I love that sort of movie.
So it's kind of, you know, the mainstream example of that would be Total Recall, the original one. Obviously, very different movie, but same idea of leaving things ambiguous and the whole question of what's real and who's real, imagined. Which life
or
is
Inception.
Real. And Inception, to some extent, yeah.
And, you know, remember a few podcasts ago, I was complaining that movies don't have good sexual tension. This movie has a lot of sexual tension. Not good for me. My point is you should be making good R-rated movies and not shying away from things. And there's some scenes in this movie which are just jaw-dropping. Like, what the hell was that? Like, you know, the story's going along. And there'll be one scene where, like, what the hell is that? You know?
I love it.
So
it's not playing yet. I can't find it in the cinema near us at the minute.
But I honestly think this might be too trippy for some people. And it might be too pretentious. And a lot of people might come out of this saying, they just created the stage and then they ended the movie. They didn't know what to do with it, kind of thing.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's everything I'm
kind of
that
he woke up and it was a dream.
A frustrating puzzle without a solution. I wish I'd found the meaning, but because I could have enjoyed it. But instead, I find myself wishing I could get my time back.
So it eventually
spins itself into an overwrought irrelevance. I mean, these are some of the things that negative reviews are saying. Even though it's reviewed quite well on the whole, the people who don't like it, boy, are they beating on it.
I mean, I actually agree with every one of those negative comments. I can see how that movie, so that's why I think this movie will be very polarizing. I just loved it. And because, I like movies which mess with your head to begin with. And even if it doesn't give you all the answers, I think it, like Holy Motors, it left me with so many wonderful questions in my head.
I know, I keep thinking
and
about that.
That sounds scary to you, I know, Joe, but, you know, it just... I mean, I want to sit down and talk with somebody who's seen the movie to kind of, you know, but anyway.
All right, we may revisit this one when we
What about Jake?
Oh, Jake Gyllenhaal is very, very, very good. I think this is the kind of stuff he wants to do, and he's doing, you know, Prince of Persia on the side to make some money. Although he hasn't done a Prince of Persia in a long time.
He's done good movies recently.
So I think I like that he's embracing. He's very good, and to his great credit, you know, it's not like one character has long hair and the other character has short hair, or one has a beard and the other one doesn't. They literally both look the same. So that's even more heavy lifting he has to do to differentiate the two characters, right? And he does it purely out of the persona, because they physically, their clothes may be a little bit different, but they physically look the same. So I think he's really, really good.
He's an amazing actor.
I'm just looking at his CV now. I mean, ever since Prince of Persia, Yazid, you know, I mean, he's done Love and Other Drugs, Source mm-hmm. Code, End of Watch, Prisoners, and now Enemy. Yeah. I mean, it's a good list of movies. End of Watch is one of your favorites, Joe, from last year.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I mean, he's doing good work.
Yeah.
He's one of the better actors out there right now. I think he chooses his work wisely, and he, yeah, I don't think he's done like the big blockbuster thing for a while, for good reason. I think he's wasted in those movies.
Yeah,
I think his best days are ahead of him, though.
I
mean, even though we're seeing him do really good work, I think his best days are yet to come.
Well, he's had some pretty good days already. I mean, let's not forget Brokeback Mountain.
Of course.
He was nominated, but not. He didn't win.
No, he won. He won Best Supporting, didn't he?
No.
Jarhead from back in the day.
No,
I mean,
Jarhead was great, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, he conveys the feeling that the whole movie just might be a documentation of insanity. That it might just, and that's a difficult thing to do. Maybe it's just one person coming undone and his life is literally breaking up into two. And to the movie's great credit, I started thinking about the fact that these two characters might be the same person, like a full 10 days after I'd seen the movie. While I saw the movie, and 10 days later, I was absolutely convinced that these are two different characters. He just meets somebody who looks like him. And then I'm like, wait, what if they're the same person? So anyway.
All right, wrap it up. I want to see it.
You know,
I don't care what your score is.
Right, so who is making films like this right now? Nobody, and not certainly not the big studios, you know. And I think in the current climate of homogenized, patronizing fare, you know, fed to us through the hopper, films like this need to be cherished and venerated. And give me 100 head-scratching, ambiguous films like Enemy, then one more Transformers. It gets an easy, easy 8 out of 10 from me.
Wow.
But I resonate with this kind of stuff. I can tell you 5 out of 10 people are going to hate this movie. Maybe 6 out of 10.
I'm excited. I mean, I can't wait. I mean, I think we ended up at Nymphomaniac because I couldn't find Enemy.
Yeah, and there's one thing I'm so dying to say about the movie, and I almost said it right now, but I'm going to hold off if you guys are going to see it.
Yeah, no, yes, we're definitely going to see it.
All right, so mail at moviegorillas.com. Let us know what you think.
And if you've seen Nymphomaniac, who do you side with?
Yes. Rashmi's wrong, I am right. No, we'll see. I mean, yes, you do see Nymphomaniac, but we might want to revisit this same podcast again at some point, because we'll have seen Enemy, and Nymphomaniac Part 2, I think, is... See, that's very clever marketing on their part. They get two podcasts out of us by releasing the movie in two halves.
Yeah, and two sets of reviews.
So
I might forego that one.
Facebook.com/MovieRollers as well. Our community is growing, yay. So keep adding people. That would be terrific to see. Until our next episode, it's too many movies and too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.